Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Krowich, I'm just going to go.
Yeah, just go do it.
Ready?
Yeah.
This is Radiolab. I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krowich.
And today our topic is zoos. We're doing a little sort of chronological thing, tracing a line from past to present, starting back at those old nasty concrete enclosures, which I'm sure you loved to visit as a little boy.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, you're a city boy. You don't have much animals here.
Well, there's nothing to do with New York. What is it, like Tennessee? Is like
right. You're right. Fine. In this case, but when you talk about, you know, enriching the lives of gorillas, as we did before the break, it's a simple, heartwarming story because gorillas are, well, they're vegetarians, frankly. It gets a lot more complicated when you switch to a predator animal.
Who likes to pounce and chase and bite.
Yes. If you're going to put those animals in a cage and their whole being is organized around killing things, well, what do you feed them? I asked that question to NPR science reporter Nell Boyce.
If we're talking like the big carnivores, like the tigers that would normally be out in the wild ripping other animals to shreds.
Yeah. What do they eat?
They're eating mostly this. This is a little bag of kibble. It's basically like dog food.
Here, check it out.
This is for a meat-eating animal?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Try one.
All right.
He's so skinny.
Oh, it's like eating chalk.
This is what the predators eat, according to Nell.
Really? Why don't they just give them meat?
That's sort of what she wanted to know.
Testing the mini disc before heading to the zoo. Testing the mini disc before heading to the zoo.
Nell recently took a trip to the Toledo Zoo.
Good morning, Toledo Zoo.
Oh, hi. I'm here to see Andy.
She wanted to know what it might look like if a zoo actually gave the predators what they want. In this regard, the Toledo Zoo is pretty radical.
Once a year, they have this event they call the Big Feed.
The Big Feed.
The Big Feed.
And that gate should be opening.
Thank you.
Nell got there a day early just to check things out.
Okay, so I duck behind the rhino house.
So we're going to go behind the scenes here.
So I go in the back door, and where I finally end up is this kind of nondescript kitchen.
This is the kitchen. We have a freezer and refrigerator down here.
You don't think about a kitchen being at the zoo, but there's a kitchen here.
Yes, there is.
So I'm sorry, your name again was Beverly?
Schoonover.
Schoonover.
Yes, Beverly Schoonover.
And this kitchen is actually the reason I came.
This is our freezer. It usually runs about 10 below. These are the rats. And we actually have rats in about four sizes. We have large, jumbo, monsters. And then we have packs of 50 mice, packs of 25 mice. And then these are the fuzzies. These are probably about 10 days old. The fuzzies and the pinkies are pretty much newborn.
Here's the basic idea. You want to get closer to what the animals actually eat in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to give them some sort of whole animal.
Whole as in like all the fur still
eyeballs,
on. Eyeballs,
whiskers. So what are things different today because the big feed is tomorrow? Hooves.
Hooves?
Yeah. The tigers are getting some calves. And that's not something that we give out like all the time.
Calves?
Can we look at it?
Yeah.
So they take me into the freezer. And in the corner, just sort of on the floor, is this box. And it's got a black garbage bag kind of thing in it, which we open up, you know. And, like, looking right up at me...
That happens to be the head part.
...is the baby calf.
But that's just the head.
It was like a little baby. Little eyelashes, little ears... It's a baby cow, you know, and I thought, oh, baby cow. And then I thought, oh my God, tomorrow, little children are going to be watching this baby cow be ripped apart by a giant wild cat.
They're wild animals. You know, they live in a captive situation, but they still have those wild instincts.
That's Beth Stark. She's the one who brought carcass feeding to the Toledo Zoo.
The time we hear, oh, carnivores are meat eaters, but really, they're not just meat eaters, they're flesh eaters. They eat other animals. And one of the challenges there is you know, how do we provide for the welfare of the animals while at the same time providing for the needs of our visitors?
So it's about 10 o'clock in the morning, and the gates are open now, so visitors are starting to stream in. In about 15 minutes or so, they're going to start the tiger feed. The tiger feeding was the first feeding of the day. A big crowd was beginning to gather. Right now, the tigers aren't in the pen.
How many people?
Oh, like maybe 150 people. A lot of little kids.
So we brought the boy down. Been pumped since my wife told me about it, so we made sure we got here early to check this out.
The carcasses were already out. The zookeeper comes out with her microphone and like sort of gives a little
part of our enrichment program
description of carcass feeding,
ensures that we meet
why they do it,
all of the animals' behavioral needs as well as their psychological needs. So what
and
that means
nobody at this point is listening to the interpretive discussion of this because as she's doing this,
hey bud, I think I heard a door.
They let the tigers into the pen. Oh look, here come the tigers.
Watch, Brian, look, the big one's coming down.
One of the tigers just like streaks across the pen and grabs the carcass and like, you know, it starts like immediately playing with it. And I have never seen, in all my years of zoo going, I have never seen a tiger move that fast. Like at one point, one of the tigers was like carrying one around by the ear. You could see like the little calf face and it was dragging it around.
What were people doing? Were they cheering? Were they crying?
There was nobody there that seemed to be disturbed by it.
Really?
Although, here was a conversation that I heard many, many times. The children would say,
Mommy,
what is that? What is he eating? And the parent would say,
it's actually a baby cow.
It's a baby cow. And the kid would say,
Why is he doing that?
Why do they kill it?
Well, honey,
the tigers
eat, honey.
Have to eat.
Well, that's what he eats.
That's the kind of the food that they so, eat.
And the child would say, well,
I
don't eat cow.
What, honey?
I don't eat cows.
Yeah, you do.
And the parent would say, what? Of course you eat cow.
At home.
You eat hamburgers.
You eat hamburgers.
What do you think a hamburger is?
It's made out of cows.
Sure is.
And there would just be this shocked look on the kid. And I must have heard that conversation like 5 times.
Why is it dead?
Because it's food, honey.
But they're dead.
And now it's food.
Wow, that's like a birds and the bees kind of moment.
Yeah, it really was.
People are just fascinated by it. They appreciate being so close to it.
Tom, you see them back there? Way back in the back?
They'll say, oh, God, that's really gross, but then moving closer for a better view.
What Beth Stark was telling me is that, you know, the whole time that they've been doing this carcass feeding program, they would interview people afterwards and ask them questions.
We did survey people.
You know, how did you feel? What did you think?
And found that more than...
And what she found...
98% of them...
Is that the public is pretty much uniformly...
Very positive in what they saw.
Enthusiastic.
One of the questions we put on the survey is, do you want to see more of this, and which animals would you like to see?
And so what did people say?
Just about everybody, from what I can remember, circled every animal we put.
Every animal?
Just about every animal.
Yeah, every animal. You know, like, you know, do you want to see dead rabbits? Do you want to see dead rats? Do you want to see dead calves? Do you want to see dead deers? And do you want them to see them fed to polar bears, tigers, wolves? You know, like a Chinese menu, you know, like pick your prey animal, pick your predator. Do you want to see that? And they're like, yes, yes, we want to see this. The only complaints were people didn't want rabbits fed at Easter.
And around Easter, you know, parents... complaining or worrying that their kid was thinking that the Easter bunny was being eaten.
It just shows you how, like, what the animals eat at the zoo is fraught with sort of human emotions and ideas about right and wrong. Here's another example, okay? So when I was at the tiger pen, there was this woman who came up and was very interested. She didn't seem turned off by the idea that they were eating a dead calf, right? Yeah. But then she got this very strange look on her face, and she said, I hope that was dead. And I said, well, does it matter? I mean, because at some point it died. You know, does it matter whether it died at the hands of a human or the hands of a tiger? And it was late in the afternoon and I'm ready to go. So I turn off my tape recorder. And just at that second, even though she's just expressed sort of relief that the calf was dead when it was put in the tiger's pen, she starts to tell this story that was so diametrically opposed to what she had just expressed that I just had to turn my tape recorder back on and say, like, wait a minute.
Okay, wait.
Can you start at the whole beginning? So what was happening?
What happened?
A squirrel fell through the wires on the snow leopard's cage.
She and her daughter had been hanging out by the snow leopard's pen. There's this sort of net kind of above the pen. And there was this squirrel that had been walking on the net, and it fell down.
Squirrel is really dumb.
Into the snow leopard's pen.
Really?
And her daughter described the story to me, where the snow leopard, who had just been like kind of hanging out, kind of bored, immediately began to stalk the squirrel.
The snow leopard was pouncing.
And the squirrel like started trying to get away.
Yeah.
Her mother said it was like this standoff.
Oh, yes.
Where like the snow leopard was matching all of the moves of the squirrel.
Yes, he followed him move for move.
And like the audience was kind of transfixed. Her daughter, like, could not watch.
She hid when she thought the squirrel was coming down.
Yeah.
Yeah, she took off.
Her daughter couldn't watch, was hiding her face.
And in the end, the squirrel escaped.
But the squirrel got away. He was smarter.
And I said to the girl, well, how did you feel? Were you rooting for the leopard or the squirrel?
Which one?
And she said,
leopard.
I was rooting for the snow leopard.
Huh.
And I said, but you didn't want to see it eat the squirrel. You didn't want to see that. And she said, well,
I still wanted to root for the snow leopard because
I didn't want to see it, but
I still wanted to see it. Because it was cool, but
nature, right?
Yeah.
It's the wild.
I think that the reason they felt comfortable watching that and telling me about it was because it seemed like an episode that was not between the animals and the human. It was between the animals.
But what about you? If you were that little girl, how would you watch that whole scene? Would you watch it kind of gleefully or more sheepishly?
You just watch. It's just happening in front of you. I mean, that has nothing to do with you.
It's funny, you know, she never mentioned the possibility of feeding live animals to a predator.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Nell Boyce is a science reporter for NPR. Thank you, Nell.
Not those frozen ratsicle things, but something that scurries and you can bite
the
head
off. Yeah, well, live feeding is a line which American zoos will not cross. The only places that do feed out live animals, as far as we could find, are in China. But lucky for us.
Yeah, I live in Beijing.
That's where reporter Jocelyn Ford lives.
It was just over an hour's bus ride outside of Beijing.
We asked Jocelyn to go visit one of these live feeding parks.
That's what they're called, live feeding parks?
Mm-hmm. You just get on a bus, they drive you right into the lion's den, and they'll even sell you a chicken.
The chickens are about $4 each.
And the tour people sell them right there on the bus?
Right in the bus. Okay, so they drive to the lion's den, and one of the people on the bus, one of the tourists, decided, okay, I'm going to buy a chicken, and I'm going to feed the lion. And everyone sort of leaps to that side of the bus. The guy who bought the chicken, he would pick it up and press it against the glass.
Here come the lions.
And soon we had four or five lions sitting right under our window, looking at us.
They're circling us. Two lions. Three lionesses. Waiting at the window. He looks very intent.
I tell you, they had the most intent look I have ever seen anywhere. I mean, they have these very cold amber eyes.
Big angry. Hungry eyes. Whoa, he looks like he's ready to pounce.
And the guy with the chicken just opened the window and dropped the chicken out.
In a split second, that lion grabbed the chicken and just took it in his mouth.
And held it in his mouth, and I noticed that its legs were still quivering.
Now it's working away at it, just sort of ripping it to bits. Now it's a pile of feathers.
I asked a grandmother who was on the bus. She was with something like a 5-year-old. And I asked her if she thought this was a healthy thing to have this her grandson watching this cruel event. And she said, hey, it'll make him a braver guy. If you don't eat them first, they're going to eat you. And she was just very matter-of-fact about it. One woman said, we should teach our kids to love animals. But at the same time, if, you know, the bigger animal eats the smaller animal, that's the way the world works. So you should understand this.
Survival of the fittest, just your Darwin.
And you should also understand where you fit into it. If you're weak and you can't, you know, run fast, escape or whatever, you'll become somebody's dinner. And that's the lesson of life. I think in the United States that we're often so far removed from the ugly part of the food we eat. We just get squeamish when we see it. Whereas, especially the rural people in China, you know, they deal with life and death of animals around them all the time. And I think we're just closing our eyes to it. Having said that, I mean, personally, I feel that it does make for a more humane society when you do feel sorry or compassionate about the animals around you. And there was no concern at the safari park here, nothing of that sort. It was all about fun and games. Okay, so at the end of the bus ride, they drop you off at a little circus-like place. And they had a little fake shooting gallery with all sorts of rinky-tink music. And I went and looked under this dirty old tent which was thrown up over some metal rods. And there were rows of cages and tigers pacing back and forth and yowling. Have you ever heard a tiger yowl? In a cage, just the length of his body, he can turn around, but that's about it.
Thanks to reporter Jocelyn Ford. This is Radio Lab. I'm Chad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich.
And we'll continue in a moment.